to talk about the pitfalls of the counselor. The pitfalls of the counselor. Now, there are lots of things that can go wrong when you're counseling someone else, and we want to talk about them so that you can watch for them and not get into them. I'm not telling you so that, well, in some cases you'll be learning, oh, that's why that went wrong. So you will learn a little bit about what happened to you in the past, but mostly the reason I'm going to give this lecture is so that you can know what to watch for when you're counseling someone so that you can be careful not to get involved in it, so you can see it. It says the prudent person sees evil and hides himself, but the foolish goes on and is punished for it. So we want to be prudent people who can see what's coming. We want to be prudent people who can see what's coming, who can see something that we're going to get ourselves into that's a bad situation, and keep ourselves from getting into that situation. Okay, so if you know your enemy, you can be informed as to what's going on. First point is pride. Probably the biggest problem you will have, and it will be related to the other points that we're going to mention, but probably the biggest problem you will have while you're counseling is pride. That once you gain a certain proficiency in being able to help other people with their problems, you can fall into the trap of thinking that you are something that you are not. And so it's important for you to acknowledge your dependence upon God and not become proud over your knowledge. That's probably the biggest problem. You will gain knowledge in how to handle people, how to deal with people and help them with their problems. And when you see people helped with your knowledge, then you have to be really careful not to become proud over your knowledge. Counseling also brings a certain amount of power or authority in your life. When people recognize that you can help other people, it gives you a certain amount of authority. This is sometimes called veritas authority, the idea that certain kinds of authority come from truth, that when you know something, other people are willing to submit to you because you know. And so you have to be very careful not to use that knowledge or power or authority in any way that's detrimental to someone else. In other words, your motives have to be loving, sincere, unselfish. I was thinking about selfishness, and I thought, no, you don't want to be involved in that. Sincere, honest, unselfish. Your motives have to be correct when you're dealing with other people. At least you're thinking, so you caught that. I almost didn't catch it. I'm half asleep. Okay, so you can be proud over your knowledge, over your power, over your ability to deal with other people. And so you need to be very careful not to become proud. People will sometimes appeal to you in this fashion. They'll come to you and they'll say things like this. Well, you're really the only one who understands my problems, and you're the only one here who can really help me. And you need to watch out for that. That's a trap. Because what they're doing is they're trying to appeal to your sense of pride. And you need to resist that kind of thing and cut it off as soon as you hear it. When somebody comes to me and says that, what I do is I automatically confront them with the truth of the situation. Because what they're saying is not true. Now, what they're doing is they're trying to manipulate you by appealing to your pride. And you need to stop them, but you have to be careful how you stop them. When the person says, well, you're really the only one here who understands me, you don't stop them by saying, now look, you're trying to appeal to my pride, and you're trying to manipulate me and take advantage of me. You don't stop them like that. What you do is confront them with the situation as it is. They are saying that you're the only one who can help them, and that's not true. And so you confront them with the reality of the situation. If a person comes to me and says, you're really the only one who can help me, you're the only one who really understands me, what I say is something like this. Look, that's not true. There are many people here who can handle your problem. There are many people who understand what's going on, and everybody here loves you. And so there are many people who can handle your problems, and if you're honest, and you have a humble heart, and you're open, you can receive from everybody that's here. Okay? And that puts the perspective back where it should be, and that is, anybody that's open and honest and humble in their heart can receive from everybody in a Christian community. Okay? So you can stop the person. You don't confront them by saying, you're being manipulative, and oh, you need to stop trying to appeal to my pride and things like that. You don't need to tell them that. You recognize that that's true. But what you need to do is confront them with something that will help them as a person. Because what they're doing is singling you out and saying that you're the only one who can help them, and it's not true, and it's not helpful to them. They need to recognize that everybody in the community can help them. See, actually, it's a matter of pride. It's a matter of pride. They're appealing to your pride, but it's a matter of pride for them, too, in that what they're trying to do is get you to be the only person who will deal with them. And they don't want to have a humble heart and acknowledge that everybody can give to them. You understand that? What they're doing is they're being involved in pride, and you need to confront them with their pride and tell them that they need to have an open heart and an honest heart and a humble heart to everybody that's in a community or a group or church or whatever. Okay? One thing that'll help you with your pride is if you follow the instructions that Jesus gave as to how to build your faith. This will also build your faith. And the apostles came to Jesus and they said, increase our faith. And he said, well, if you had faith as a grain of mustard seed, you'd say to this tree, be removed and cast in the sea, and it would obey you, or this mountain, and it would obey you. But then he went on to say a very interesting thing. He gave a very interesting parable. And he said this. He said, which one of you, when he has a servant plowing in a field, and the servant comes in, sits down, or has the servant sit down, and then serves the servant? He said, he doesn't do that, does he? No, he sits down, and the servant serves him, and he says, you serve me, and then afterwards you can eat. And he doesn't thank the servant that the servant did what he was told, does he? And then Jesus applied that, and he said, so you too, after you've done everything that was told you, say, this is what you're to say, we are unworthy slaves, not worthless, that's different. We are unworthy slaves because we have done only what we were told to do. And that will help you with your humility, and it will help increase your faith, because when you're humble, your faith will increase. And how is that? After you've done what Jesus has told you to do in counseling somebody, then you say, either to the person, or you say just to God afterwards, God, I'm an unworthy slave because I've only done what you've told me to do. All I've done is be obedient to what your Holy Spirit and your Word has told me to do. You can't go beyond your obligation to God. You can't get brownie points with God. Because what is the standard? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And if you do that, you can't do anything more. And so if you fulfill your obligation to God, you can't do any more. And if you do any less, you're sinning. So you can either fulfill your obligation to God, or you can sin. But you can't do any more. So you can't gain brownie points with God. See? There's no way to get a plus sign with God. You either fulfill your obligation or you sin. Right? Okay. So after you've done everything that the Lord has told you to do, then say, I'm an unworthy slave. I've done only what I was told to do. And that's what you're doing in counseling. All you're doing is delivering to another person what God has told you to tell them. You're not doing anything fantastic or great. You're delivering what God has told you to do so that God can move in that person's life. All you're doing is being obedient. And if you get that viewpoint on it, it will help you. Okay? I experienced that in a very concrete fashion one time when Carol and I were counseling a girl, and we prayed with the girl. And during that time, there was a lot of supernatural wisdom that came from the Holy Spirit and deeply ministered to this girl's heart. And then afterwards, she said, thank you very much for what you've done. And I felt I should apply that at that point. And I said, I'm an unworthy slave. I've done only what I was commanded to do. And that freed me from the hassle of having to battle with any kind of pride in what had happened in the counseling situation. I'm an unworthy slave. I've done only what I was commanded to do. All I've been doing is being obedient to deliver what God has told me to do. And that freed me from having to battle with any pride in what had happened in the counseling appointment with her, so that the next counseling appointment I had, I was free to receive things from God. I was free to receive the word of knowledge, word of wisdom from God in the next counseling appointment. It built my faith. Okay? Because I was free from having to battle with pride. Pride hinders your faith. Okay, so point number one is pride. Probably the biggest problem that you will face in counseling. Number two. Second problem is not living what you are trying to counsel other people. Not living what you are trying to counsel other people. If you try to counsel other people to follow something that you yourself are not living, we've already talked about one of the problems with that. That is, it's like a proverb in the mouth of fools. It's like the legs that hang down from the lame. It's useless. It will have no effect, no power. A proverb in the mouth of fools is like a thorn that goes up into the hand of a drunkard. The person that you're counseling isn't going to feel it. They're not going to receive it. It's not going to have any power at all because the things that you're speaking are not backed up by your life, so you won't have any authority. So not living what you're counseling is dangerous. It'll be useless to the other person, but it's also dangerous to you. In Matthew 5, verse 19, Matthew 5:19. Whoever then annuls one of the least of these commandments and so teaches others shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever keeps and teaches them shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So we see that we have to be living before we can be teaching. It says you have to keep them and then teach them. And it's very dangerous for you to be not keeping something and then teaching it, because you're probably going to be teaching other people not to keep the commandments of God. And if you do so, if you teach other people not to keep the commandments by your example, then you can be considered least in the kingdom of heaven. Now, do you have to be perfect then to be able to counsel? No, you don't. Because God judges us according to our motives. If we are honest and open with the truth, living everything that we know is right at any particular time, then we can teach other people the same things that we ourselves are trying to keep. So it has to do with motive and not faultlessness. You don't have to be faultless, but your motive has to be right. You have to be honest, you have to be open and willing to change. And then you're living what you're counseling other people. If you at any time feel that someone is asking you to counsel them in an area where you yourself do not feel comfortable because you're not living it, then just tell them, I'm sorry, I can't counsel you in that area. I'm having hassles in my own... Just be honest with it. Say, don't fall in the trap of pride. Say, I'm having hassles in my own life with that problem, and I do not feel qualified at this point. May I direct you to someone else that may be qualified to help you with that? And you please pray for me that the Lord will help me with my problem in that area. Somebody comes to you and says, I'm having a problem in the area of jealousy. I'm jealous over somebody else's ministry. And you're having exactly the same problem and you're fighting in prayer with bitterness and jealousy over somebody else's ministry, then tell them to go away and find somebody else. Say, I'm sorry, but I cannot help you at this point. Okay? Or if you feel that because of some unconfessed sin in your life, you are not qualified to counsel anybody at that point, just tell them, I'm sorry, I cannot counsel you. I have things in my own life that I need to get straightened out, and I need time to pray. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that you have to stop for a week. Okay? I've told people that before, and I've said, would you please come back in about an hour? I need some time to get some things straightened out with the Lord, and so if you'd please come back in an hour, then I'll be ready to deal with you after I've gotten my own life straightened out, and I've been able to pray about our counseling appointment. See? And the person is going to feel much more comfortable when they come back because they realize that you want your life to be straight. See, that you're being honest with your own life. It is not going to make the person feel less comfortable with you if you've got problems and you need to get them straightened out. It will make them feel more comfortable because they realize that you're a human being and you want your life to be right with God before you deal with them. See? It won't make them feel less comfortable, but more comfortable. You know, oh, this person's being honest with their life. So they believe, they will trust then that the counsel that they're receiving is going to be honest. And if you can't help them, you'll actually say that. I'm sorry, I can't help you. Okay. He who humbles himself will be exalted. But the enemy tries to tell us that if we humble ourselves, other people will not respect us. That's not true. If we humble ourselves, we will be exalted. But the enemy tries to tell us that if you humble yourself, other people won't respect you. And that's a lie. God's word says otherwise. If you humble yourself, people will, in the long run, respect you. Okay? Number three is the problem of overextending yourself. Trying to take on more counseling than you can handle. Most people overextend themselves and take on more than they can handle because they don't recognize their own limitations. First, it's a problem of knowledge. They don't recognize their own limitations. And then after they know their own limitations, they sometimes fall into the trap of pride. And they're not willing to submit to their own limitations. And you need to be humble and submit to your own limitations. If you can only counsel 3 people a day, then counsel 3 people a day and don't try to do 4. If you've had a really hard counseling time and you can't handle anymore, if it's possible for the next person, maybe it's the last person of the day, tell them, look, I have had a really hard day and I really can't handle anymore, so I'm not going to be effective in counseling. I think it would be better if we put off your counseling appointment till tomorrow. Is that possible? Can we arrange it that way? And submit to your own limitations and don't try to counsel somebody when you're finished counseling people. When you've had it emotionally and spiritually, don't go on. You need to learn where your limitations are and then say, I'm sorry, I can't handle it. You know? If somebody says, could you please spend some time with me today? I'm sorry, I've spent time with about 4 people already and I can't handle any more. So can we please put it off until tomorrow? And some people will be very gracious with that. Some people that are fairly mature, and they'll tell you, well, I asked a guy one time, a guy that had demons, and his demons were acting up, and I said, I'm sorry, but I've had too much hassle today with some other people, and I can't handle the problem today. I said, can we please put it off to some other time? And the guy said, oh, fine. He said, I've lived with them for years. He said, I'll live another day. So I'm not going to die in the meantime. I said, well, it's a wonderful attitude. Thank you very much. You see. And with most people, their problems are like that. They've been living with them for years. And so one more day or one more week is not going to make any difference. They're not going to die in the meantime. One guy came to me and his demons were acting up and he thought he had to be delivered right then. And I said, look, I'll pray for you and you won't die in the meantime. I'll talk to you tomorrow, okay? And I'll pray for you that you won't die. You won't die. Oh, okay. You'll be able to handle it till tomorrow. So submit to your own limitations. Be humble, be honest, and if you have to tell somebody, I can't handle it, just tell them that. But try to schedule your day such that people will not wear you out. Try to schedule it so that you can handle what you schedule. Don't overextend yourself. Number 4, a lack of preparation. Not preparing yourself properly for a counseling appointment. This is a pitfall. If you're not prepared for a counseling appointment, you won't be able to handle it. You're going to fall into fear because you know that you're working on the basis of your own strength and not God's strength. You know that it hasn't been covered in prayer. You're not going to have faith to believe that God's going to be working in the counseling appointment, and so you'll fall into fear. When you get involved in fear, and you try to continue having a counseling appointment and you're not prepared, then you're going to have a very bad time and it's going to be detrimental both to the person you're counseling and to you. So don't do that. Be prepared. The one thing that you'll probably, when you get really busy, when you become really busy, the one thing that you will probably lack most is prayer. And that's what you need to be really careful of, that you have prepared yourself in prayer for each counseling appointment. When I was having a consistent and regular counseling time with people where I would counsel every afternoon and I would either be in a school or I would study in the mornings and I would counsel in the afternoons and evenings, I tried to plan it so that there would be 10 or 15 minutes in between counseling appointments so that I could stop and pray about the last counseling appointment and I could pray about the counseling appointment that I was going to have. Now, that wasn't the only time I spent praying. I prayed in my devotion. I prayed other times during the day. I would pray sometimes the evening before about the counseling appointments for the next day. and spend some time doing that. But I wanted to have some time, a little bit of time, in between the counseling appointments so I could get rid of the last one, get it out of my heart, and then pray about the next one that I was going to be dealing with, even though I'd already prayed some other times about it. So be sure that you deal with the counseling appointments in prayer. The problem is we can think that other issues are more important than praying for the counseling appointment. We think we can sort of glide through a counseling appointment on what we already have rather than having to pray for it, and it doesn't work. Ask me how I know. Okay? We think other issues are more important, and we get too busy. We don't pray. It doesn't work. Number five, getting our priorities confused can be a problem, can be a pitfall. Getting our priorities confused. Now, this is exactly the opposite of number four. Number four is when we think that other issues are more important than getting ready for our counseling and our counseling. Number five is when you make other issues more important and it keeps you from counseling. Excuse me. No, it's the other way around. It's when you make counseling more important than your other issues that should be more important. Thank you. I needed that look. She looked at me like, "What? That wasn't opposite." It's when you make your counseling more important than other issues, and you don't make the other issues give them the priority that they should have, and thus it messes up your counseling because you should be doing something else other than counseling. If I give some examples, this may help. If you're married and you don't put your family before your counseling, then your priorities are confused and it will hinder your counseling. Because your priority is first to God. God is first in your life. Then your family. If you're married or have married and have children, have a family. Your family comes next. Your ministry then is next to the rest of the body of Christ. And then after that, to the unbeliever. Okay? Because it says, do good to all men, but especially to those who are in the household of God. So God makes a priority of believers over unbelievers. Right? Okay? Makes a priority of believers over unbelievers. And then he says that the minister should take care of his own family first. Because if he doesn't take care of his own family, then how is he going to know how to control the church of God? How can you counsel other people if you're not dealing with the problems in your own family correctly? See? And so, before everything is God. He has to have preeminence in all things. So there's God, and then your family, and then the rest of the church, and then the unbeliever. So God gives us our priorities in the Scripture. Of course, there are other verses that talk about those priorities than the ones I just quoted, but at least you know a few verses that have to do with those priorities. Okay, so getting your priorities confused is a problem. When you don't make something that's more important than counseling more important than counseling. See? A guy came to me one night and he said, I think I have demons. Another guy had brought him. And I said, okay, I have told my wife that tonight I am going to be with her. I am sorry, but I'm going to be with her. And so I'll have to see you tomorrow or something like that. I'll pray for you that you won't die. And you go away. And if you want to pray with this brother here, that's fine. I'm sure this brother can handle it. You can take care of it together. And if you're okay by tomorrow, let me know so we don't need a counseling appointment. And the next day, I saw the guy and he'd been delivered. See? He was able. The brother that had brought me was able to handle it himself when he got in a pinch. See? And so that was good for the other brother because it forced the guy into the situation where he had to pray for somebody for deliverance. And he found out that he could handle it. See? And so it helped the other person too, but the thing was, I had told my wife that I would be with her that evening, and so I had to tell the guy, I'm sorry, I can't be with you tonight because I've told my wife I'd be with her. And she takes priority over my counseling. Okay? Now there are times too when Carol and I have agreed to be together, and then some crisis situation comes up and Carol says, well, that's okay, we'll just spend time together some other time. The important thing is that she knows that we are going to spend time together. See, that we will have some time together. It's not necessary for her always to have it right then. But there are times when we've said, we're going to be together and we're going to do this on this night, and we can't do it some other time. See? And so then that becomes a priority, and if somebody has a crisis counseling situation, well, they'll have to go find somebody else. See? We care about the person. We say, look, I think you could go see so-and-so. They might be able to counsel you right now. But I can't handle you right now. I'll see you tomorrow, or you could go see somebody else if you must see somebody tonight. Okay, number six. Not looking to yourself. Not being careful about yourself after you've counseled somebody. I'll explain this. You just go ahead and write it down. Not looking to yourself. Not being careful about your own life after you've counseled somebody else. Galatians 6, verse 1 says, brethren, even if a man is caught in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one. That's the, has to do with the counseling process, praying with a person, praying for the person. Restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, each one looking to yourself, lest you too be tempted. Now, the immediate thing that you think of when you read that verse is pride. That because you're restoring somebody else, that you could be tempted with pride because you've helped somebody else to get out of their mess, and you didn't fall to that temptation, so you could be proud. Eh? Proud of your strength or proud of your spirituality. You who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness or meekness, looking to yourself lest you too be tempted. See? Because you are spiritual, then don't think that because you're spiritual that therefore you can handle anything. See? Now, that pride is the immediate temptation, but I found that it goes a little deeper than that. There are other things involved besides pride in temptation. I have found through a number of series of counseling experiences, lots of counseling, that you can also be tempted in the very area that you've counseled the person. Whether or not you've ever had a temptation in that area in your life, that may be the strangest, weirdest temptation. You'd think you'd never, ever be tempted with something like that. And yet you can have temptation in that area because you counseled that person. And what it is you have counseled a person and you have confronted the spiritual world in an aggressive fashion, and you can get back from the spiritual world exactly what you've confronted. Do you understand? You have made inroads into the spiritual world in breaking bondages in a person's life, and that will affect the spiritual world. The enemy is going to be concerned that someone has been set free, because then that person who is free is a greater threat to him. See? And so when you confront somebody with something that's wrong in their life and help them with that, then you can get a kickback from the spiritual world in that very area.